Everybody, I'd like to welcome you to our January EMCC and a happy 2018. First, we'll start off with the approval of the minutes. I reviewed them and did not see any corrections. If there's no opposition, I would move that we approve the minutes from the previous meeting. And next, OCMS report and correspondence and medical director's report.
Yeah, I'll start with the medical director's report. Most of what I need to discuss is already in the agenda, but I did want to bring up a point that we do have four interfacility transports between hospitals and even between clinics and other health facilities. We do have the IFT ALS program, which is very active. They did 10,000 runs this past year. We are getting calls and concerns from some of the 911 providers that they're being called to do interfacility transports. And what that does is then pulls a 911 unit out of service, sometimes up to 90 minutes. So we will be working on a memo to go out to the system and to notify everybody that the really appropriate means for interfacility transport is the private sector IFT ALS units that really were developed for that issue in the first place. And that's all I have. We'll put out a formal memo on that as we work on that. And I can answer any questions otherwise, but the rest of my report's really in the agenda.
On those interfacility transfers, what about for trauma patients? So if there's like a walk-in gunshot wound to an outside community hospital, would that be appropriate to use the 911 system?
Correct. So we do have the 911 retriage, and that's specifically for trauma patients.
Okay.
We are having a little trouble with that because the CDPH is questioning the whether there has to be a physician-to-physician contact before that can be done. And we usually do it simultaneously. But I'm in discussions with him. We'll probably have to adjust our policy since.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on your report there?
No. Do you want to go ahead and announce Mike? Carl, I announced at the last.
We announced at the last meeting that Dr. Carl Schultz was recently hired on as the associate EMS medical director, and he wasn't here, so he's here now. He does exist, the green M&M. And the other in your packet on page 48, we sent out an announcement mid-December announcing that Mike DeLobby, within our office, was recently promoted to assistant EMS administrator. So he's will be doing that as well as his systems and standards section. So he'll be working double, triple duty for a while.
Well, congratulations to both of you. Next, EMCC Advisory Subcommittee.
Diversion.
Pardon.
And that's Mike's going to do that.
Yeah, good morning, EMCC committee members. So in your packet under attachment 2, you'll find the hospital diversion report. After the cover page, it consists of 9 pages, and I'll briefly run through the content on the pages, and we can take any questions after that. So the first 3 pages, the areas are broken down into northwest, south, central, and coastal areas, and this demonstrates hospital diversion broken down by percent of time the hospital's on diversion for each month from January to December. When you get to the fourth page in the packet after the cover page, the total hours of diversion are listed there. So it's the same number or time that facilities on diversion, but it's in hours as opposed to percentage. So it just gives a different perspective. So that's the total hours month over month for 2017, January to December. The fifth page of the packet is emergency receiving center diversion month over month, year over year from 2012 to 2017. So you can see the trending over past several years. On the sixth page of the packet is trauma receiving center diversion reported as percent of time on diversion. The seventh page of the packet is cardiovascular receiving center diversion reported as percent of time on diversion. The eighth page of the packet is internal disruption or internal disruption diversion, also reported as percent of time on diversion. And then the ninth page, the final page, is CT diversion, and is also reported as percent of time that the facility was on diversion for CAT scan being down. And that's the diversion report January to December for 2017.
Thank you, Mike. Next, Adrian, he'll be addressing the 911 emergency ambulance transport contract performance.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm here to announce that CARE Ambulance and Emergency Ambulance monthly response time compliance for all geographical ambulance response zones, and those are A, B, C, D, and E, for the first quarter of 2017-2018 fiscal year exceeded the 90th percentile standard set forth by the contract. And that's it.
Thank you, Adrian.
You're welcome.
Next, EMCC correspondence, which is attached.
Stephen Wontrobsky would like to speak on the EMCC correspondence.
Sure. We can do that under the, let's do that under the public forum section. Next, the EMCC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group reports for facilities and education and training. Anything to report?
Yeah. The facilities committee meet on November 14th, and there were two primary issues dealt with in that meeting. One was discussion of addition of a new trauma center into the system and whether that was feasible or not. And later in the packet, under new business, a report for that committee is included in this packet. It hasn't been the trauma system operation report has not been reviewed by facilities. I believe they meet next week. And then they'll be coming back with a recommendation to EMCC. The other thing in facilities advisory was the establishment or recommendation of the establishment of maximum APOT time or ambulance patient offload time in Orange County. Those that have been at many of the meetings before realize that that was delegated to facilities. It's required by the state. The time that is the issue that the state looks at is the 90th fractile. So 90% of the time, a ambulance should be offloaded in an emergency department. X number of minutes, and the X is recommended to this committee to be 35 minutes. So the recommendation of facilities, and I think this will need to be a motion, the recommendation of facilities is that the Orange County standard for ambulance patient offload time be 35 minutes 90% of the time. Hopefully I said that correctly.
Sure. Let me ask a technical question. Is that a state standard or is that an internal standard that we came up with or a national standard?
The state statutes and regs require each local EMS agency to establish their own standard. So it would just be an Orange County standard. There are different times in the state. They range from 25 to 35 minutes.
Okay. So the upper limits are normal.
Mm-hmm.
So would anybody like to make a motion to?
Well,
go ahead.
No.
Other questions?
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
So at the last facilities meeting in November, all the hospitals weren't present to discuss it fully, so we're requesting that we have it vetted further, until we get everybody on board for all the hospitals before we make a decision on the standard time.
I'm sorry, Dr. You said the state standard is what?
There is no state standard, but we have to report the data to the state. It's one of those convoluted statutes that and I can't say it politically correctly, so I'll just shut up on that. But There is no state standard. Each county basically is setting their own standard. The state did give data that they have received in December, and Orange County is very much in the middle distribution up and down the state.
I know that, you know, for departments across the county, it's becoming more problematic. I'm getting a lot more alerts that were beyond the time, you know, for our 911 responders to be out of service. You know, I understand the hospital's concerns, but I know for 911 providers, it's a huge concern trying to get back into service for that next 911 call. I mean, 35 minutes seems like a long time, but you know, if it's right in the middle, I would support that.
Have we looked at what the counties around us are doing, L.A., San Diego, Inland Empire?
So we're in the section of talking about what facilities talked about at their committee meeting. We're going to get into the detail of the three quarters of 2017 data for APOT. So it might be that question and also what the state expectation is, as well as the conversations that have been held over the last 6 months in FAC. And in this committee last time. So I just, rather than make any motions right now, wait till we go through this report.
Wait till we go to attachment number five. Okay, sure. I think that's fair. Anything else that you need to add on education and training or facilities?
Mike, I have a question.
Sure.
So what are the issues that generally cause a delay in offloading in an emergency department?
So you don't have any beds available.
So it's bed, not personnel.
Right. So you're at capacity. You have patients that are waiting to be moved upstairs to the inpatient, the hospital. Like right now with the flu, the hospital's running at capacity.
Right.
And so we're holding multiple admitted patients in the emergency.
So there's just no space.
There's just not a bed physically available. Okay. Anything else there on those two reports? So now let's move on to unfinished business, ambulance patient offload times, which is attachment number five. Which in your packet is page 66.
So on page 67, we have the data for, this is the October data, and then the year to date up through October for 2017. So just to explain what this data, what's being described here. Again, the state looks at the 90th percentile APOT time, or what's called the 90th fractile, and that's shown in your left-hand column for the state. It gives the number of transports, 911 transports, in the far left column that each hospital has received up until that point of time in 2017, which is October. Then the APOT time in the 90th fractile is in the middle. This is in the year-to-date column. And for comparison, because the two are interrelated, diversion hours for that hospital are then provided in the right-hand column on the year-to-date. So transports, so for example, if you go down the column, Hoge Hospital is the busiest hospital in Orange County with regard to 911 transports received. They offload patients 90% of the time. They offload patients in 18 minutes and 9 seconds. So 90% of the time they're offloading within 18 minutes. And in 2017, up until this point in time, they had no diversion time. Just to explain what that is. Then to the right-hand side in the October column, so each month, and then we also report this quarterly to the state, Again, are the transports for that month in the left-hand column, APOT time, and then to allow for for our office to run statistical analysis, because 90th percentile measurements really don't lend itself to looking at standard deviations or 95% confidence intervals or anything that where you can apply regular statistics. We also look at the mean or average time and the median time, and those are provided in those columns next to the right of the 90th percentile. And those numbers obviously are much less than the 90th percentile because they're measures of central tendency of the data spread. And then we have the diversion hours for that month in the right-hand column. And at the bottom, then we give the median actually the median and the interquartile range for all hospitals for the entire system. That's for comparison to see where a hospital lies with regard to the median for all the entire system. And that median hospital at the bottom is not weighted per hospital, it's total data. So it's total runs, the median APOT time.
Anybody have any questions on that?
I just want to confirm this is 911 data only?
Correct.
Okay. And do you have any indication on APOT times for behavioral emergencies? Because I know that that's a problem area.
No.
Okay, thanks.
Dr. Stratton, you know, as far as some of these numbers here, and I'm sure the facilities are looking at it, but you look at like Hoag, who's got the most 911, and they're at 18 minutes, and then you have, you know, St. Jude's, let's say, for as an example, what are they at, 46 minutes or something? Do they look at it? Is that because of beds in the ER, or it seems like... I don't know how large the ER is at Hoag, but do they look at that kind of data on what the solution is, how one hospital does it this way, one hospital does it that way?
I honestly...
That is the reason why we're publicly reporting this, so that hospitals that seem to be getting patients through quicker and more efficiently, even being the most highest volume with low diversion hours, what is their best practice? What are they doing right? Some of it might be the fact that, I don't know how many beds, let's say La Palma Hospital has, but if they only have 6 beds, you know, there's right. It's a capacity issue. But clearly there's some hospitals here with very low diversion and very low APOT times that are doing something in their facilities that make this possible. And the whole point to make this publicly available is for these other hospitals to share in the wealth. What are they doing differently? What was shared at FAC in November was the data that is on page 67. And since that time, we now have 6 more months worth of data. And when you look at the aggregate, the numbers are consistent. Yes, we have spikes in December, but the aggregate APOP time is 28 minutes. When we spoke and gave this data to FAC in November, there was a lot of discussion, and our recommendation was based on the data that we had, we recommended a 30-minute standard. The discussion that followed was, well, what about these hospitals that are clearly going to be outliers and not even going to be near that, which was why they voted to recommend a 35-minute APOT. To your question, we did look at what other counties are doing, and there's, like, LA County has not established their APOT yet, but Riverside, some other counties have, and it's ranging between 20 and 30 minutes. But we really can't compare ourselves to other counties. We really need to look at our own local capabilities, what our bed capacity is, how many providers we have. So that data is not as meaningful as we'd like it to be. We can't compare ourselves.
And that makes sense. How hard would it be to add a column to these charts indicating the number of emergency beds so it's more of a fair comparison? Yeah. I see heads nodding.
I think even a more meaningful number is when you take the patient volume divided by the number of beds.
Yes.
So there's some national standards that suggest that if you're seeing more than 1,500 patients per bed, that you're starting to get at the capacity point. And then when you get up to about 1,900, it's well documented that your elopements and AMAs, people leaving before the treatment's completed, go up. So there's some I think industry standards about how many patients per bed. So you take a place like Hogue, where I believe they're running 77 beds in their emergency department.
It's not just a bed capacity issue, though. It's an acuity issue. Well, you could have 100 beds, but if all of your patients are
on ventilators,
very high acuity, then that variable isn't going to matter as much. But we can certainly provide different
metrics
layers to figure it out.
Yep. Also, one other comment as far as that whole thing, it would be nice if facilities would look into what is the standard operating procedures once that 30 minutes or 35 minutes is hit. Because I know, you know, internally with certain departments, the EMS coordinator or battalion chief, whatever, is notified to call the hospital and say, hey, is there any way we can free somebody up because we're hurting here? If they could look into that to see if there's some sort of quality assurance or something to look into that when that threshold is hit.
That's the end goal here. We're just in the beginning phase of getting to that point. Right now, what we're trying to do is just collect and gather, and you know, what's our denominator here? What are we looking at? And once we fine tune and get those numbers accurately, establish the standard, then we can jump to okay, what are you trending at? What triggers internally do you have in place to mitigate that? So
you'll be looking at surge capacity plans within each hospital and trying to standardize how hospitals would be doing that in the future?
Our expectation at the hospitals themselves need to be evaluating that. They know their capacity better than we do. Our goal is to look at it from an aggregate standpoint, provide the objective data, and the expectation is the hospitals will do their own legwork and do their own internal analysis to see why they're not meeting it and how they can do better.
Correct.
You know, my other thought was the folks doing the transport probably try to transport to the closest center, but if they look at this data, it might be worth driving 5 minutes further to a hospital with half the time to offload if they're taking that into account. I don't know if they can do that in the heat of the action out there dealing with these calls, but it's something to ponder that these impacted hospitals probably should be receiving less patients to begin with just because of their performance.
And there's a trade-off between diversion and offload time. So if you're trying to reduce your diversion hours so that people don't have to drive further, then they're going to spend more time with their offloads. Whereas if people go on diversion, you're going to drive longer, but you may get to a place where you offload faster.
True.
So it may not have any effect on your out-of-service time if you have to drive further, but you offload faster.
Yep.
And have we looked at any data that impacts the fire departments and the ambulance companies when they are standing by the wall in an emergency department? What risks are out to the community that maybe the hospitals don't know about? For instance, you know, we're gathering this data, but what's the value of it? What's the value of decreasing wall time? Does it have a significant impact to the EMS community by having medics and ambulance crews standing by the walls in the emergency department?
Well, it's a circular effect. There absolutely is an adverse impact to the hospital system itself in that, you know, one of the big problems in ER overcrowding is throughput. The backside of that where the ambulance comes in is in the discharges out of the unit to either other facilities or to a unit. When an ambulance is tied up in an ER, unavailable, both for the patients coming in to the hospital that ambulance might be used, as well as the discharges.
But is that anecdotal?
No, it's significant, and that's part of this. One of the things I'm hoping that we'll get to is look at IFT APOT, because that absolutely ties back to throughput in EDs.
So to answer your question, yes, there is. And California Hospitalization put out, in conjunction with the state EMS authority, a document 2 years ago talking about how hospitals can better manage their throughput and their wall time. This was before the statute went into place to establish a local standard. It's not just anecdotal. And we are also working with the state to establish the financial impacts. We were recently asked, you know, what is your unit hour cost for an ambulance? And let's multiply that by, let's just say our standard is 30 minutes in Orange County. If they've been on the wall for 2 hours, multiply your unit hour cost times an hour and a half, and that's a financial impact to that ambulance sitting on the wall. There are some LEMSAs, and we are not looking at this, that are taking that number and have been authorized by their county to bill the hospital for those, kind of get their attention, like, hey, this is the cost you're shifting to us because we can't offload the patient to your ED gurney.
2 days ago, we had an ambulance held up at a hospital in Los Angeles County for 8 hours.
Ooh. Good Lord.
It's the flu season. And it's bad, but 8 hours.
If we do end up passing this measure that we're talking about, would it be fair to put some language in it, asking that hospitals that consistently don't meet it, explain what they're going to do to fix that?
Yeah, that was another question. What would the penalty be if they went outside of this 35-minute?
So, would
there be a penalty?
That was a discussion. In fact, we're not to the point. We need to establish what is our denominator and what is our benchmark. We have not, and we don't have any intention of establishing a penalty.
No. I'm thinking more just ask them. Well, what is your action plan? How are you going to try to? Maybe they have no answers,
right.
But it'd be nice to see that there's some effort to improve. Mm-hmm.
So do we take that as a motion from the facilities, or do we need to make a motion here to approve the 35-minute?
Well, the facilities is recommending 35 minutes as the 90th percentile fractile standard for the county. Whether it's a motion or not, I think
we just need to take a vote to approve it.
Yeah.
So is there any other discussion before we vote to approve the 35 minutes?
Well, I think earlier there was a request to give some more input on it from constituent groups. So I don't know if that person would like to speak to it. From my perspective, I believe 35 minutes is just too high. It's better than nothing, but I think it's the wrong mark. Historically, when you go back before nurse ratios were put in place, the informal industry standard was 20 minutes. 30 minutes seems like a reasonable error to accommodate, the change in the system and seasonal influxes. But I believe above that mark, we're going to be on the high side to the norm.
The problem I see with that is that the hospitals are going to say it should be 50 minutes, and the ambulance companies are going to say it should be 10 minutes, and it's going to be back to 35 minutes. that's the dilemma I see
Well, the current average is 25 minutes here in Orange County. Is that what I'm seeing correct here?
So year to date, 28 minutes?
So that's an average. It'd be interesting to know what the median was.
It's 69. So if you look on page 69, this is a compilation of when we started doing, looking at the data from October.
It's 25 minutes.
Actually.
Oh,
page 69 is the best page to look at because it's a cumulative total for 2017 along with the corresponding month.
Median 90th percentile time is 25 minutes.
And then the 90th percentile this one is 28. Sorry, we're looking at the statistics here.
I think 35 minutes is a good starting point. My only concern is when we set that parameter, what does that do for us? Because right now we don't have anything as far as a game plan of best practices or anything like that.
I think the first part of it is to report it to hospitals. As a hospital-based provider, this is all new to me, and it's something I've never really thought about. Oh, okay. We kind of know about wall time, but nobody's ever showed us how many minutes it is. They kind of say, oh, it's a lot, and it's not. It's kind of like porridge. Is it hot, warm, or cold? And you got to put your finger in there, and you don't really know. But at least we'll have some objective data that we can follow. And then just like we do with diversion and say, well, you know, here's our goal. We want you under 6%. And I think it's a starting point for hospitals.
My only other concern, sorry, is if we set it at 35, will that provide incentive for hospitals doing way better to not do as good? Oh, we're at 20. That means we have room to screw up more for 15 more minutes. You know, that would be a real concern of mine. I want them to keep doing well.
Well, and again, we're looking at one group in the system, the group that is affected by it, which is definitely something to consider. Facilities, you know, in hospitals. Absolutely, they're the experts in knowing their capabilities. But I do think before we take a formal action as a committee, we should hear from other constituents who will be impacted. Transpo should weigh in on it, in my opinion, and other constituencies that's going to be impacted by it. So I think it's a little premature.
Yeah, I agree with Jim.
Me too.
So would you like to make a motion to that effect and we can take a vote on it?
May Stephen Wontrowski address patient offload time he's requesting before you take a vote?
Sure. You have 4 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Stephen Wontrowski. I agree with a lot of the comments from this section of the committee, all right? And I don't agree with things that say, well, it could be this or could be that. You should do a study, a statistical study, to determine whether it could be this or could be that. That's number one. Number two is that there are 6 of these hospitals here that are over 30 minutes, okay? I request that as the next agenda item for the next meeting, that we send a letter out to these 6 hospitals saying, we've got a problem in looking at the offload times here. Please respond to us with specific ideas or plans for implementation that you're going to undertake to bring these offload times down. We request that you contact your other neighboring hospitals, look into statewide research on this, but we need to have you get back with your input because this will be a discussion item for the next meeting here. All right? That's number one. You need to have this as an agenda item for the next meeting to bring in the input from those hospitals that are affected here, from these other people here who say we need input. You need to do that, all right? You just can't gloss over this thing and say, well, we're going to do some more research on this. No good, all right? The next thing is that this out-of-service stuff, you know, you talk about the cost. The residents pick up the cost of this also. With my OCFA comments, you know when those trucks, those engines, are forced to stay at that hospital? In certain cases, they're out of service. Public safety, all right? And then you need to determine with your comment, if we divert them originally, what's gonna happen with the offload time? Get the stats on that. And for a simple recommendation, there's only 6 of these people that I'm really concerned about. Why can't we just have that ambulance, the 911 system, or whoever it is, the ambulance transport, call that hospital up while this is in progress and say, can we send them to you? Or should we divert otherwise? And have that hospital say, divert or not divert. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the committee members?
I do think it would be good to put a goal for the future. I know that the data right now probably isn't available, but I believe now here shortly we'll have some data to also look at IFT APOT times, because again, when you look at the throughput, that's another area of concern for the system that hasn't had a lot of attention that I think may have some meaningful benefit if we start to approach it in the same manner. So I know with the new OC Meds EPCR data collection, we'll start to begin to get that data. And it's not something we can do today, but perhaps in a year or down the road, we can start to include that.
Tammy, this question may be for you or Dr. Stratton. So for diversion status, when a hospital is all of a sudden going above the 35 minutes or their 40 minutes wall time, does it automatically trigger diversion status?
No, it doesn't. And that's why the diversion hours are provided along with the APOT time. They are definitely interconnected, but some hospital systems have more strict requirements for their emergency department to go on diversion than others, and so there's no correlation in the data with that, other than it's been shown over and over again in the literature, the national literature, that if you have, and this happened in Massachusetts, where they did away with diversion, that if you do not have diversion, as hospitals become impacted, their APOT times go up. And then other systems, Texas in particular, shows that controlling APOT time, diversion goes up. So they both are in interplay, the opposite of each other. And I do need to make one comment, and that is that the literature, one of the reasons that the state statute was passed, and in fact, we had representatives from Orange County testify on this statute, the literature without doubt unquestionably shows that when patients are boarded or not offloaded within and it's usually a 20-minute period, mortality rate in that emergency room is higher than the norm. So it does have a definite impact on health and safety, and that eventually will be what we have to address.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if that study about the 20-minute mortality rate, it would almost seem contraindicated to do a 35-minute, wouldn't it? I mean, it would seem like we'd try to get closer to the 20.
And then bring in the golden hour.
It's a complicated, Dr. Stratton, you're from L.A. County, and I was there also, and this is like a Groundhog Day. It's in Orange County. We have a great system. We have a great system here, and it's starting to impact us more negatively now. But we're getting in front of it, which is great. So, but I would like to see if we, some of those with a diversion status, it doesn't do me any good to send my engines, as Mr. Wondrowski said, and stay at the hospital for 35 minutes if I know that they're already having wall times at 35 minutes. I'd like to maybe go to another hospital where the turnaround time might be 15 minutes or 20 minutes. At least I'm 15 minutes to the good. You know, those kind of things, it would be nice to be addressed at this this committee meeting.
Right, I agree.
So it sounds like our next step should be to invite for some feedback from transport and facilities before we move any further. Does that sound fair?
Yes. In hospitals, yeah.
Yeah.
I
would
agree. Yeah. And I think
need a motion for that?
Sure, why don't you make a motion? We can just take a vote on that.
And I think the point well taken with this, too, is there are a lot of hospitals here that are, I think Mr. Wondrowski said, that are six or eight of them, however many were, the numbers were pretty high, and we should figure out, why is the whole best practices here and another these six hospitals or whatever, best practice, they're doing this. So even that information.
Yeah. And the other thing that's absent here is we're not looking at the demographics, and that's a whole nother mess. But obviously areas that are poorer with less insured people are probably going to misuse the system a lot more. I'd like to move then that we ask for our partners in transportation and the hospital community for feedback regarding this issue of the offloading time.
And the hospitals themselves?
Yes, the hospitals themselves, of course.
A second?
Second.
All in favor?
A second.
Aye.
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 Okay.
And would we agendize this for a specific time so we have action on it, or?
I think we should. My recommendation would be to bring it back to the next meeting.
Okay. I agree.
I don't know if that'll give us enough time to get it to the committees, though, and back. Do you think it will, Tammy?
3 months, isn't
so
it?
So I'm five steps ahead of you here. I think most efficiently, and not to rush this, but to just try and get some feedback most efficiently, is facilities meets in the next couple of weeks. Transpose is going to be scheduled shortly thereafter. I also think that we could put something out globally to the entire EMS system as a public comment, provide the data. We have a brief that describes what are the definitions of APOT, what is the intent, and put that out there for public comment, for a 30-day public comment period.
Right, letting them know that we're looking at, for example, possibly 35 minutes, so they can weigh in on that figure.
Sure.
Tammy, in this discussion of this committee, is there fire representation on there at all, or?
On facilities, there is a fire EMS representative.
And there is on transport.
Pardon me?
And transportation.
And there is on transport.
Okay.
Okay. Next on the agenda for new business, EMS fee update, which is attachment number 6, on page 70.
This is just informational only, something that could have been provided in EMCC correspondence, just to notify the system that when the EMS fee schedule was approved by the board back in February, they auto-adjusted for 2018 and 2019. So it's just a notification of that minimal increase for this year.
Next, Orange County Trauma System Operations 2018 report, which is attachment number 7.
So this report is a report that is generated for facilities to review. Reason for the report was discussion at the last facilities meeting, basically regarding introduction of another trauma center in the Orange County system. We have had interest expressed by three separate facilities with regard to becoming participatory trauma centers, two as level 3 and one as a level 2. So to provide a foundation for facilities committee and this committee, we OCEMS has this white paper, which now that it's been placed in this agenda, we'll be also putting out publicly. There's not a recommended action at this time. This is for information only. So I would invite everyone to read the white paper, and we'll likely be looking at this for quite a while coming up. Adding a trauma center will have huge impact on the system.
How are our numbers? In other words, the number of patients that are going to each of the trauma centers compared to other trauma systems, are we in line with them, or are trauma centers becoming overwhelmed with the number of patients?
So our trauma centers are one trauma center is at the top end of what is considered the usual volume in the United States. Two of the trauma centers, and these are the three adult trauma centers, two of the adult trauma centers are in the median, and that data is in this report. And then we have a pediatric trauma center, which has lower volume than, it's on the lower end of volume for a pediatric center. And by the way, obviously, that pediatric center's chalk. We are next Monday and Tuesday have the American College of Surgeons here in Orange County reviewing chalk and considering verification nationally of CHOC as a pediatric trauma center. So the answer to the question is the volumes are high in the adult centers. We do have capacity in the pediatric side.
Do we need to take any action on this, or this is just informational at this point?
This is just informational. It's the first action would be coming from facilities, and similar to our APOT discussion, I think this will be something that we'll be looking for community input. It is extremely controversial with the trauma operations group, which is the trauma centers that all meet together. It was relatively vigorously discussed at facilities meeting. So this is primarily information only, and also a means of making the report public so that we can now release it. We didn't want to release it until it came before either this committee or facilities.
Great.
Are you able to comment on the geographic areas of where these applicants might be, just generally? Particularly, I'm interested to know about the north.
Yeah, so we've done a projection of adding a trauma center in the north, and two of those that are interested are in the north. And we also did a projection of adding a trauma center in the south, and we have one in the south. I realize no one's had time to read this, but it's relatively well detailed in the report.
Okay. Thank you.
Tried to keep it down to 10 pages so that it can be read with one cup of coffee.
I think it's a great idea to add more capacity. As we saw with the recent shooting in Vegas, you can very quickly overwhelm the trauma system with those kind of incidents. And sadly, those kind of incidents went up a lot last year. Not to mention, I don't know if you guys have read, but this year the chance of a big earthquake has gone up considerably. And so obviously something like that, a mass event like that, would overwhelm the system no matter what. But to me, it's never a bad idea to have more capacity.
Great. Thank you for that report. Next, attachment number 8, City of Laguna Beach upgrade to ALS unit.
This is also information only. We received a request from the City of Laguna Beach to upgrade, I think it's their station 2, to a PAU unit. State law requires that this be, that any time, it's ironic, but it goes back to the 1980s, any time a 911 ALS provider increases services, that it be reviewed by the local EMS agency. And so it's primarily here. We will be approving this. Obviously, we prefer to have more resources out. So it's for information only and to get it into the minutes in the agenda, of the agenda.
Great. Thank you. Now, number 7, new business. First of all, appointment of nominating committee for EMCC calendar year 2018 slate of officers. So we'll need to put together a nominating committee. If I could just get a couple of volunteers if anybody's interested.
I'm happy to serve again.
That'd be great.
I'll help, yeah.
Great.
Both of us will.
And typically we just do it by telephone.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Was that Karen
and Wolf and LTN.
And who else?
Jim.
Got Jim. And
Jim.
Okay.
Excuse me, Stephen Wontrowski would like to speak on number 7, City of Laguna Beach upgrade to ALSU.
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you very much, Stephen Wontrowski. The interesting thing about this item, and I don't have any objection to it, all right, but it's in comparison to what the OCFA, which I really objected to, and I made it known to everybody out there in the industry. And what it was, Chief Bowman, ex-Chief Bowman, said, you know what, I got my BLS engines out there. We can help the public out here by converting the BLS engine to an ALS engine. Just like over here, one BLS engine goes to an ALS engine. sounds good. So here's what he said. To do that, I got to add another guy at a cost of roughly $750,000 for 24/7 operation. So now I got all these additional employees coming on because he said, I need another paramedic on board. So I personally discussed this with Chief Bowman. I said, Chief, look, you've got the operating engineer, you know, the driver, as one of the guys, all right? You got a fire captain, paramedic, the second guy. You got a fire captain on every engine. And then you got a paramedic. You've already got. And Chief Bowman said, we need to have two paramedics on these engines, okay? I said, you've already got them. You got that fire captain paramedic, and you also got the regular paramedic. And here's what he said. The fire captain paramedic is not equipped. Remember those words. You can ask Chief Bowman. He is not equipped to do paramedic work, all right? He's being paid an increment in salary, supposedly to do paramedic work, and Chief Bowman said he's not equipped. And he said he's never done paramedic work, you know, in the recent past as a fire captain. They don't do it. They just don't do it, all right? So if Chief Bowman says that fire captain paramedic is not equipped, why is the EMS agency approving those fire captains to do paramedic work? Why? That's the question, all right?
I'll have to defer to the experts here.
And that's why I was so strongly against what the OCFA was doing. I don't have any problem with converting a BLS engine to an ALS engine with the two paramedics. But if you already got two there, why are you adding a third? Union demand. Union demand, okay? And you can compare every one of these engines here, ALS, three person, not four, three. So you're telling, in so many words, what you're saying is that Laguna Beach has a lousy service, which is disrespecting the public good by only having three people on board. You need to look at it that way. And the last thing is that with Laguna Beach, do they have fire captain paramedics doing paramedic work? I bet they do. But you need to look into it rather than have me come back. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not know the answer to that yet.
Let me turn my mic on. So, we can look into it. When a fire captain is on an engine, their job description is defined as that of a captain, which is managing the whole scene, assuring scene safety, making sure that traffic is controlled, and integrating often with law enforcement. So they are distracted and not doing primary patient care. Whether that fire captain is a paramedic that's licensed by the state or not is each individual department's design. Some departments, I think, have captains that are paramedics that maintain their paramedic status. And I honestly don't know what their labor agreements are with regard to pay. But I can say one thing, if a captain's on scene, and this is from years of being in the field, that captain is usually quite busy doing non-paramedic activity to assure that the whole scene is maintained in a safe and effective manner. So I don't have any better answer than that. These are, by the way, three-person engines that Laguna's looking at. So it's a captain and engineer, which is the driver, and the paramedic, who also doubles as a firefighter if it's a fire call. So there could be two paramedics with a captain paramedic, but these are generally a single paramedic who's available to function as a paramedic on these three-person engines. I also will say that I did spend time at the invitation of Laguna looking at this area. This was before the holidays, and
They do have challenges in Laguna because of the canyons and the it's the number of degrees that the roads are inclined.
Oh, the grades. Yeah.
The grades. Yeah. This engine too it's difficult for them to get a paramedic rig up once they've been deployed because of the slope of the canyons and all. So there is a need for it.
Great, thank you. So we've done number seven. We've got our nominating committee. Next, under new business, is Emergency Receiving Center, Specialty Receiving Center designations. This is attachment number 9.
Mr. Chair, I do have one comment regarding this. You know, for future looking at wall times and stuff like that, I think it might be a good idea to address some of this in these certifications or recertifications if hospitals are way out of bounds, say, hey, listen, we're going to approve it, but you really got to watch these numbers, and maybe next time you won't get approved. Stuff like that, just as one of the requirements to recertify or certify somebody is, hey, we have these wall times to meet, that kind of thing. I don't know if that's possible through through our protocol or county policies and procedures, but you know, that may be one way to address some of these, at least from an educational point of view.
Maybe you could just bring that up at facilities when they look at this and disseminate it to everybody.
All these surveys or reviews were done before we really had valid wall time data, but it definitely will be entered in, and we'll look into things. One thing obvious that hasn't been thrown out on the table yet is whether a hospital that is unable to handle their volume should be adding on specialty like stroke or cardiac services if they can't even handle their own basic volume. So that's one question that would come up. As you can see, many of these hospitals are getting multiple designations. Emergency Receiving Center, cardiac, and stroke.
With that said, and just for sake of discussion, I'll go ahead and motion to approve this.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Approved unanimously. Thank you. Next, member comments. Any of the members have any comments that they would like to make or address the committee? Next, public forum. Do we have anybody like to address
the committee? Steve Lontropsky would like to address two items. Number
sure.
4 and.
Thank you very much, Steve Lontropsky. One item before I get into the item that was my correspondence that was diverted to the end here. I strongly endorse Dr. Stratton's idea on the IFT program to tell these people, hey, look, this is what we've got working for us and you, the IFT program. Please conform to it, all right? It helps you out, it helps us out, it helps the public out, all right? Keeps people alive. So I really endorse that. But a nice, strongly worded letter telling them, this is the way you should be doing it. Not think about it. You should be doing it, okay, for the public good. Now, for correspondence, my general correspondence.
Yes.
Okay. What I'd like you to do is, one of my letters here references the JFK Profiles and Courage Award, all right? And that was given to Seal Beach, OCFA director, because she actually said, unheard words ever in the history of the OCFA that I know of, and I've been going down there to every board of director meeting for 6 years. She said, they're in financial straits is what it is. She said to the OCFA, we will not pay, Seal Beach will not pay another dime of any increase in public safety costs from you people. We've had it, all right? She got the award, all right? Because she's the only person in the history to have ever said those words. Now, with that in mind, you got to remember it too. Public safety costs. Laguna Woods, in the register said, We'll be bankrupt in 2020. We'll be bankrupt as a city with public, due to public safety costs, OCFA costs, all right? We got Westminster. They're really hurting. Placentia, they're really hurting. What we're talking about is cities that are looking to go bankrupt, all right? Down the line here in a couple of years. So, member city councils, members and residents have actually asked me to come before them, their city council meetings, and speak to the problems that we've got. And I have, all right? And I'm well received by various council members, not others, all right? There's a lot of union control over these council members, but the public, I've actually gotten applause when I go to all these meetings, okay? And what it is, there are two things here. One is the cost. I think by now everybody knows that the average firefighter for the OCFA makes 230 grand. We got all these people making 300,000, 400,000. Every executive member of the OCFA management staff makes over 300,000. That's why we call it the new city of Bell, all right? And that was when I would speak to residents and say, who makes this amount of money? They said, City of Bell. I know it. Don't tell me. It's the OCFA, all right? Now, I'm accustomed to the response from the union, and I've been harassed by the union. I've had to ask for police protection. Irvine Police do afford me protection now at the board of director meetings of the OCFA from harassment. And one of the things I hear is that you don't know what you're talking about, all right? And so the union can go to all these cities and council members and say, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And you know what? They have a good basis there because I'm not in the field. I'm not in the industry. I've just picked all this stuff up in 6 years. All right? So
I got 30 seconds to wrap up, okay, from your time allotment.
How much time did I have?
It was 3 minutes.
How much?
3 minutes.
I thought that's not what the says here. It says 4 to 6 minutes. If you don't want to hear about it, here it is. I have to go to the EMSA director because of that response to my letter. And that's where I got to go, all right?
Right.
And that letter coming back, 2-month delay, only was the result of my going to the Board of Supervisors, I believe. The responses given there were terrible. 6 of the answers were, we don't have the information. Well, you know what? If a junior knows the information, I'm looking for confirmation. So if these cities and the council members can say, yes, our own advisory committee said, it's true what he's saying. I know the answers, but I need your stamp saying he's right. Or if I'm wrong, say it. All right? And that's why I'm forced to go to the EMSA director on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public want to address the committee? No? Our next meeting is Friday, April 6th, and also put on your calendars that the July meeting, because of some work that's going to be done on the room, will be moved to July 13th from July 6th. Is that correct, the 13th?
Yep.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions?
July
13th. All right, we're adjourned. Thank you for coming today.
Oh, that's a better place.